this meeting of the Montville Planning and Zoning Commission. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Secretary, roll call, please.
Okay, Commissioner Jarnes, I am here. Commissioner Estelle?
Present.
Present. Commissioner Kolick?
Here.
Commissioner Longton?
Here.
Commissioner Pike?
Present.
Commissioner Poole?
Here.
And Commissioner Lundy?
Here.
And it looks like we're all here.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'll ask for any additions or changes to the agenda.
Liz Burdick, Director of Land Use and Development Department, Town of Montville. I would like to add a new business item B to the, I'm sorry, new business item C to the agenda. November 1st is coming rapidly. We haven't spent a lot of time with these regulations. So I would like to have a public hearing at the next meeting to extend the moratorium until April.
Okay.
I sent you the regulations that we started with. Mm-hmm. But we really didn't get very far with them. Mm-hmm. I also, Meredith did a little research for towns in the Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governor region. She put together a little thing with all of their regulations, and we've sent those to you. And I would like to, under B, have a short discussion tonight, questions you have with what you have. But I would recommend that you receive application 23ZC3, which is, we have to go through it again. It's mm-hmm. a text amendment to change the expiration date on the moratorium until April of 2024. That gives us some time. As you know, we're short one member, actually now two members, and we have a new member coming on next month. He's appointed at the October meeting. He's already been interviewed. So then you can sit with the new members as well. So I would recommend that you add that to the agenda and then receive it and take action later in the meeting.
Is there a motion to add item C to the agenda?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Commissioner Longton and Commissioner Desjardins, first and second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay. It will be added then. Thank you. Any other additions or changes? Okay. Now on to approval of the minutes from the August 22nd, 2023 regular meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded by Commissioners Longton and Pike. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay, the minutes have been approved. At this time, I'll ask for remarks from the public not relating to items on the agenda. So if it is on the agenda, please hold your comments until the appropriate time. At this time, though, we will invite remarks from the public. Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to item 7A, which is a public hearing for 23-1, which is 958 Route 163, parcel ID 046-008-000, Oakdale, Connecticut. The owner applicant is the Navar Company, Dean Fisk, for a proposed two-lot re-subdivision. This was submitted on July 26, 2023, and received August 22, 2023, with a public hearing set for this evening. The public hearing must be closed by a decision required by October 30th. Is there a motion to open the public hearing?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded by Commissioners Desjardins and Longton. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right, the public hearing is now open. Liz, what should we know about this?
So this property is located at 958 Route 163. in the vicinity of Cape Oakdale, going up the hill. There's an old farmhouse on the left. The applicant proposes to do a one-lot re-subdivision to create one new lot for residential lot, though. There's no regulated activities proposed as part of it, but there are wetlands on... Oh, thank you, Meredith. I'm going to read the exhibit list first. How does that sound?
Fabulous.
Okay, exhibit list for 958 163 Oakdale, one lot re-subdivision. Exhibit 1 is the application including subdivision checklist, engineering memorandum, and estimate of P&S improvements. Number 2, plans titled proposed two lot subdivision of 958 Route 163, Montville, Connecticut, prepared by Soli Engineering, dated July 17, 2023. Number 3 is assistant planner comments, dated 7/25/2023. Number 4, Uncas Health comments, dated 8/2/2023. 5, planner comments, dated 8/8/23. 6, favorable report from the IWC, dated 8/21/23. 7, chain of title letter from Attorney James Neal, dated 8/23/23. Applicant's response to Uncas Health comments dated 8/31/23. Exhibit 9, Soli Engineering proposed one lot re-subdivision of 958 Route 163. Dated July 17, 23. Exhibit 10, revised application dated 8/28/23. Exhibit 11, applicant's response to assistant planner comments dated 8/31. Exhibit 12, applicant's response to planner comments dated 8/31. Exhibit 13, revised plans, title proposed one lot re-subdivision of 958-23, revision dated 8/31/23. Exhibit 14, assistant planner comments 2, dated 9/5. Exhibit 15, Uncas Health comments number 2, dated 9/6. Exhibit 16, planner comments number 2, dated 9/7. 17, public hearing notice published in the day newspaper on 9/15 and 9/22/23. Public hearing notice posted to the town of Montville website on 9/8/23. Exhibit 19, applicant's response to planner comments 2, dated 9/13. Exhibit 20, applicant's response to assistant planner comments 2, dated 9/13. Exhibit 21, revised plans, title proposed one lot re-subdivision, revised to 9/12/23. Exhibit 22, proposed lot split for Town of Montville Assessor's Office. Exhibit 23, assistant planner handwritten comments, number 3, dated 9/15. Exhibit 24, applicant's response to assistant planner's comments, handwritten comments, number 3, dated 9/18. Exhibit 25 is assistant planner comments dated 9/19. Exhibit 26, revised plans titled proposed one lot re-subdivision of 958 Route 163, received 9/19/23. Exhibit 27, revised plans received 9/22/23. Exhibit 28 is a proposed drainage easement. Exhibit 29 is a proposed driveway easement. Exhibit 30, assistant comment, planner comments number 5, dated 9/25/23, and planner comments number 3, dated 9/26/23. Submitted 9/26/23. So those are the exhibits for the record. I'm sorry, that was handful, but we've had a lot of correspondence with the company regarding this application. As you, if you remember, this originally came in as a two-lot subdivision. It was determined that it's a re-subdivision, so it is a one-lot re-subdivision, which requires a public hearing, which is why we're here this evening. So, just to let you know, getting back to the Inland Wetlands Commissions, there are no regulated activities proposed for this re-subdivision lot. However, when the wetlands on the property, it still needs to be referred to the Wetlands Commission for a report to the commission. And they submitted a favorable report regarding the re-subdivision at its 8/17/23 meeting. So that requirement has been satisfied. Uncas Health Center, all their comments have been addressed. Assistant Planner, all of her comments have been addressed. We are waiting on State of Connecticut DOT preliminary approval for the driveway, including sightline, and there's another outstanding issue. We have two outstanding issues still. One is the DOT comments, which were inadvertently not submitted to DOT, so we're going to have to, I'm going to recommend, I'm going to let the applicant present the presentation this evening, but at the end of the day, I'm going to recommend it be continued so I can address these outstanding issues. We also received closed access and drainage easement documents on 922, and they still need further revision and review by various attorneys. There is an existing driveway that goes over one of the lots, and there's an existing pipe that drains from an adjacent property over the lot, and the applicant is granting that adjacent lot easements for access and for drainage. So we're still working on those two little items. So I don't know if anyone's up here. I was getting nervous because I didn't see you, but you're Robert, right? This is Robert from Sully Engineering. I'm going to let him present the application to you. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. And we'll go from there.
Thank you. Whenever you're ready, if you could just state your name for the record, that would be helpful.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Robert Pryor, P-R-Y-O-R, and I'm a licensed engineer and land surveyor here in Connecticut, and I'm with Sully Engineering. Our offices are at 501 Main Street in Monroe, Connecticut. I'm here this evening representing the applicant, which is the property owner, the Nevar Company, and they're actually located in Cheshire, Connecticut. The purpose of the application is to divide this property into two conforming lots. The parcel has previously been the subject of three splits and subdivisions over time, so that's why we've determined that it is, in fact, a re-subdivision and not just a simple subdivision. Again, we are not, it's a just basically to divide this overall property into two lots. No new roadway, no new any kind of other infrastructures proposed at this time. The site's located on the eastern side of Oakdale Road, Route 163. As was already stated by the planner, the Route 163 is a state highway, so it's under the DOT jurisdiction. With regard to any work that would be done in the right-of-way or any driveways that enter onto Route 163. The site contains 30.66 acres currently. It's currently a mix of open agricultural unused agricultural property and with wooded areas. The wooded areas are primarily to the western and southern portion of the property, and the open areas are closer to Oakdale Road. There are two wetland areas on the site. There's a larger wetland corridor located in the wooded northerly portion of the site, and then there's a small pocket wetland in the southerly portion of the site closer to Oakdale Road. The site's currently developed with a single-family home, wood frame residence. There's associated driveway, well, and septic system associated with that residence. There's a wood frame garage on the property. And then there's a kind of a concrete slab to the north of the residence. And I look back through the historic aerial photographs. I can't tell when that was actually a structure. I assume it was a structure, but I couldn't determine from the aerial photographs when that was actually a barn or something else. But there is an existing concrete slab there. The proposed re-subdivision proposes two lots. Lot one, which would be 9.803 acres. It will includes the northern portion of the property and contains the existing house, garage, driveway, well, and septic system. Lot 2 is 20.853 acres. It's consequently the southerly portion of the site. And for the purpose of this application, we've shown a single-family residence development on Lot 2. And obviously the lot layout that we've shown on Lot 2 is one, represents one of many possible layouts that could be done on Lot 2, which is pretty typical of any subdivision. Is that the ultimate property owner of that lot will determine how that lot actually gets developed as far as configuration of what's going to be there. With regard to on-site wetlands or water courses, there are no regulated activity. The health district has reviewed and given favorable recommendation with regard to the plans. At this time, we believe that both lots meet all the applicable zoning regulations. So after a thorough review by town staff, we're not aware as we sit here today that there's any comments that indicate otherwise, that these lots do not meet all the zoning requirements of your zoning regulations. So with regard to the outstanding issues, two outstanding issues that we're aware of, easements, as was stated, our neighbor has two encroachments that are on our property. At the request of staff, we've proposed to provide easements for those encroachments. I mean, we're granting easements to our neighbor to allow those encroachments or those trespass that are on our property to remain. So there's two. There's one for the drive. There's an easement for the driveway, which is now encroaches, and then there's a culvert that comes from that property. So we're providing a drainage easement as well. Obviously, the easements. We're granting the easements to our neighbor. We could grant those easements at any time. We could file easements tomorrow to grant those rights. So I think there was an indication that perhaps our neighbor would have to approve those easements. We don't believe that's the case. We're granting them rights. They could assert additional rights either through a prescriptive rights, because I do believe that they. There's probably, I think the house looks like it was, looks based on records, was built in 1991. So those encroachments could have existed since then, before then. Certainly there could be a claim to assert prescriptive rights for the driveway. That's not something that's adjudicated here. That's something that a court decides. So we're providing easements to take care of the existing encroachments. As requested by staff. Aside from that, if there's any questions, I do have two copies of the plan sets that were requested by us.
Any questions from the commission? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Pryor.
Thank you.
So at this time, does the commission have any questions for the town planner?
I do. So he made a comment, our presenter made a comment that this is a re-subdivision, but if a subdivision was proposed before and it wasn't executed, how is it justified being a re-subdivision?
So the application was submitted as a two-lot subdivision. When Meredith and I started reviewing it obvious to us that it's not a subdivision, that it was a re-subdivision. So once a subdivision happens, the next lot created out of that property is a re-subdivision that required a public hearing. What we did was we asked the applicant through its attorney to provide us with a chain of title letter. In other words, we're not attorneys, asked for a chain of title letter from the applicant's attorney confirming that it indeed is a re-subdivision. He provided us with a letter and a chain of title that the surveyor or their engineers did. So we changed it to a re-subdivision because originally it was submitted in error as a subdivision. So once we determined that it was not a subdivision, we've made it a re-subdivision application and advertised this public hearing appropriately. So in other words, it was submitted as a subdivision in error. We determined that it wasn't in error. Attorney confirmed that we were correct in that it was not a subdivision. Mm.
So this lot was, there was a free split done post the adoption of subdivision regulations in 1974. That was the first free split. And in 1987, the previous owners split another lot off. That was a subdivision because that was, you get the first free split, and then once you split another lot off, then it had to go through a subdivision process. That's back in 1987. So, and then in 89, it looks like there possibly was another lot split off. So that also went through subdivision. So the subdivision that we're talking about that happened previously was years ago. We didn't pick that up in our original application. Town staff picked that up, and so we revised our application to be a re-subdivision as opposed to a subdivision.
No, it explains it. Thank you. Thank you for explaining it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chain of command.
Yeah. You think of 30 acre and knock off a 10 acre lot.
All right. So, Liz, it's your understanding or your feeling that additional information is needed prior to approving this application?
Yes, except that I do suggest that you take public comment.
Oh, yes.
Before this is done, in which case anybody that wishes to speak would have to come up to the microphone.
Okay. So as this is a public hearing, we do invite public comment on this application. So feel free to come forward if you would like to make a comment.
Who's in favor and who's not in favor? That's who's in favor.
Yeah, I messed that up.
That's okay.
Madam Chair, just to be clear so I understand my just difficult to hear the back of the room, but the colloquy between yourself and the town planner was to the extent that the public hearing would be continued until next month for all purposes.
Well, that would be my recommendation, but I wanted the hearing to be open. I wanted to have the application presented by the applicant and take any public comment at this time.
Oh, I understand, but my question is would there be an opportunity for public comment next time?
Yes.
Yes.
That was
John Chase,
for the record.
Would anyone like to comment in favor of the application? Would anyone like to comment opposed to the application? As with a public hearing, we have to ask three times for each. So anyone in favor? Anyone opposed? In favor? Opposed? And I'll entertain a motion. Well, we're going to keep the public hearing open, right?
Right. So, yes. So there's those two outstanding issues that I think are important to address prior to closing the public hearing. So my recommendation to this commission is to make a motion to continue the hearing until our 10/24/23 meeting.
I make a motion that we keep the public hearing until next meeting.
Okay.
Second.
Having been first and seconded by Commissioners Desjardins and Lawton, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? The motion passes. Thank you very much. We'll now move on to old business. Item 8A, it's 23/2, Old Colchester Road, parcel ID 037-006-000, Oakdale, Connecticut. The owner applicant is Watch Hill Builders LLC for a proposed 6-lot subdivision. The application was submitted on August 4th, 2023 and received August 22nd, 2023. and a decision is required by October 25th. Liz, what should we know about this application?
Okay, so really quickly, this is an application for a six-lot subdivision at Old Colchester Road, parcel ID 037-006-000. 45.67 acres of land for six proposed residential building lots. And I'm going to be really brief here because Attorney Heller is here on behalf of the applicant. He'll make a very detailed presentation. But just to let you know, this application was forwarded to the Inland Wetlands Commission for a report, and it issued a favorable report to this commission for the subdivision. No regulated activities are proposed at this time. So they forwarded a favorable report. Uncas Health District made several comments on 817 regarding individual lot development that would come when the lots are beginning to be developed. Town engineer commented 825. The assistant planner comments were dated 925 were addressed. Public Works Department comments dated 821 have been addressed. And here, I'm sorry, folks. The revised plans that were revised from 925 actually address my comments that I had in previous memos. I do have a staff recommendation. I'm going to hold off on that until after the presentation is made, and we can go from there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Attorney Heller.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Harry Heller. I'm an attorney with an office at 736 Route 32 in Uncasville, and I'm representing the applicant, Watch Hill Builders. As your planner indicated, this is a 25-acre parcel located on the southerly side of Old Colchester Road, just past the crest in the hill. If you're coming up from the high school, you go up over the hill where it flattens out. That's where this property is, on the right. The property is located in an R120 zoning district, so it requires 2.67 acres for a lot. We're proposing to subdivide it into six residential building lots. The four lots, 1, 2, 5, and 6, are standard lots that contain the 2.67 acres, required to have 200 feet of frontage. All the lots meet the bulk requirements for the zone. Lots 3 and 4 are rear lots according to your zoning regulations. They're required to have 150% of the minimum lot area for the district. So they have to have 180,000 square feet of lot area, and they both exceed that. There's no water and sewer in this area, so we're proposing on-site wells and on-site septic systems. Soil testing has been done and reviewed by the Uncas Health District, and as the staff report indicates, all of the lots meet the minimum requirements for the installation of on-site septic systems. Five of the six lots do not require an engineered system. The sixth lot does, and that has been noted on the plan. All of the staff review comments have been addressed, as the planner indicated, and have been incorporated either into modifications to the plan that are contained in the September 25th revision, four notes that are listed on the plan. One thing that's a little bit unique about this application is we have provided a 35-foot centerline offset for Old Colchester Road. If you go back and look at your older zoning regulations in the town of Montville, there was a road classification system for all streets and roads in the town. And Old Colchester Road was classified as an arterial road that required a 70-foot right-of-way. When the last revision of the zoning regulations was done, and the subdivision regulations, they now refer to the road improvement standards that have been adopted by the town council. And somehow, when the road improvement standards were adopted, they left out right-of-way delineation for arterial roads. So you go from an industrial commercial road to, I think the next one is a minor collector?
Sub-collector.
So they've left out arterials and they've left out collectors. But we have designed this in accordance with the older regulations, and I've discussed that with staff, because Old Colchester Road is the major east-west arterial in the town, and it should have a 70-foot right-of-way for future improvement. So that's pretty much it. It's a pretty standard subdivision.
Thank you. Any questions for Attorney Hiller?
Taking 25.67 acres divided by 6, so each lot will be approximately 4.25 acres.
Well, that'll be the average, yes.
Average, yeah. So it has to be 3 acres or above, but no less than 3 acres.
Well, no less than 120,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Montville uses what we call a builder's acre, which is 200 by 200, whereas an actual acre is 208.5 by 208.5. So it's 2.67 acres, not 3.
That sounds reasonable.
Okay. Thank you very much, Attorney.
Thank you.
Liz?
Yeah, I would just like to confirm what Attorney Hiller said about the roadway. That is actually correct, and I did also review our old regulations, which stated that Old Colchester Road was an arterial with a 35-foot setback from the center line. Although it's not required, the applicant is providing it, and the town engineer and the public works director are very happy with this because it sort of keeps the alignment of all the other lots around the road with the 35-foot from the center line of the road offset. Mm. So, although not required, it's being offered, and the town engineer and DPW are happy that it is being done so.
Any questions for the town planner?
I have a quick question. Is it one shared drive, or is there two driveways leading to rear lots?
It's a common driveway.
Prepared to answer.
Too quickly.
In your regulations for interior lots, each lot has to have a 25-foot access strip that's owned by that lot, but it doesn't require that you have two separate driveways side by side. So for a lot of reasons, one of which is creating less impervious surface, when we have that situation, we generally do a common drive.
Okay.
So the lot frontage is right next to each other.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
The driveway goes over it, and there's easement documents that are part of the application.
Yep. Okay.
Easement and maintenance agreements.
At the end of the shared driveway, is there sufficient room for trucks to turn around, like plow trucks and fire trucks?
The town engineer and the we forwarded the application to the fire marshal. He did not respond, so I'm going to assume he didn't have any issues if he didn't respond. But we also, this application was reviewed by the town engineer and the public works director, and they did not comment that that would be an issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So it dead ends. It dead ends, right?
What dead ends?
Goes to lots 3 and 4 and it just dead ends.
Right, so the common portion of the driveway goes to a certain point and then it branches off into individual driveways for individual houses. So
back to Commissioner Longton's question, mm-hmm. from sending an emergency vehicle up there, is that emergency vehicle able to turn around?
Well, common.
Or is it just going to split into a Y and that's the end of it?
I see the thing right here.
I guess we won't know, and it splits off into the lots. Now, I'm going to ask Attorney Heller a question, but common driveways are designed at a wider to accommodate, vehicles going to the back. Attorney Heller?
I've never seen a situation where that fire truck didn't turn around.
Where it'll fail away.
It wasn't so long ago we had this problem when you were a town council, where we had to fix a road in town because it wasn't wide enough, and it's not the same exact situation. It was about emergency vehicles accessing. What was that road?
Maynard Road.
Maynard Road. Thank you very much.
This will be better than Maynard Road.
Right, it's 25 feet wide, I see that. But does it actually...
And it'll actually have 18 feet of improved width.
It'll have a shoulder.
Yeah. On top of the 25?
No. 18 feet improved. The 25 is the right-of-way.
Right-of-way, okay.
But the actual improved portion will be 25 feet, which is wider than some of our town roads.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's not going to have a cul-de-sac. I mean, they're going to have to do a couple maneuvers to turn around and get out, but they can do it.
They can just do a K-turn and get out.
Yeah. Right.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree that it shouldn't be too much of an issue. I mean, the driveway's not a mile long.
Yep.
It's a common driveway, but I think it's designed in such a way that there should be no issues with turning around, and the fire marshal made no comment, so I can't really speak on his behalf.
Thank you.
Mr. Kobluck?
Will this common driveway be paved or gravel surface? Paved?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. So you'll see in the memo for the record from the town planner, there is a motion suggested for favorable approval with conditions. Would anyone like to make a motion?
Yes, for the record, I do recommend that you should
work on
the plan's actually better than
it. Do you need a minimal comment? All right, I'll make the motion. I'm making a motion to approve application EZ number 23 sub 2, Old Colchester Road, parcel ID 037-006-000. Oakdale, Connecticut. Owner applicant Watch Hill Builders LLC for a proposed 6-lot subdivision, and that the application, supporting documentation, and the plan entitled Pine Grove Subdivision prepared for D'Amato Brothers Builders, Montville, Connecticut, prepared by Bennett and Smilus Associates Incorporated, dated 7/28/2023, revised 9/25/23, comply with the Town of Montville zoning and subdivision regulations and road standards with the following conditions. One, any outstanding comments of the town engineer shall be addressed prior to endorsement of the final subdivision plan. Two, LS shall certify proposed iron pins as set and street line monuments at the extreme ends of the subdivision on Old Colchester Road as set prior to endorsement of the final plan. So we got a couple twos here. What are we doing here?
Oh, that was me.
Fine, I'll just... Okay, so three?
Yes, thank you.
No problem. Three wetlands placards shall be placed by a licensed land surveyor at the 50 URA on each lot. Number four, the Montville Department of Public Works director shall be notified prior to any work within the town right-of-way. Number five, per SR Section 3.9 GIS, digital data shall be provided to the planning department prior to endorsement of the final subdivision plan. Number six, quick claim deeds for road widening strips submitted as part of this subdivision application shall be reviewed, approved by the town attorney prior to endorsement of the final subdivision.
Excuse me, may I ask you to upgrade that? These are warranty deeds, not quick claim. That's my fault.
Warranty deed?
Right.
Warranty deeds.
Thank you.
Correct, Attorney John?
Warranty deed and with a certificate
of title. Warranty deeds.
You want me to read that again?
Not quick claim, I think.
Sure. Number six is warranty deeds for road widening strips submitted as part of this subdivision application shall be reviewed. Approval by the town attorney prior to the endorsement of the final subdivision plan. Number seven, final plan shall be signed and sealed by licensed LS&PE and certified soil scientist.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Second.
Okay, it's been first and seconded by Commissioners Pike and Commissioner Stell. Any discussion? Let's do a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Okay, Commissioner Jardins in favor. Commissioner Stell?
Favor.
Commissioner Kobluck?
In favor.
Commissioner Longton?
Favor.
Commissioner Pike?
Favor.
Commissioner Poole?
In favor.
Commissioner Lundey?
In favor.
We are all in favor.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Now on to new business, item 9A. This is application number 23-Site-9-125 Depot Road, parcel ID 071-007-000, Uncasville, Connecticut. The applicant is KKSH2 LLC on behalf of Marine Materials Management Limited Owner, Uncasville LLC, Gateway Montville LLC lessee. The agent is attorney Harry Heller for a site plan, coastal site plan review for Marine Materials Management Transloading Facility at existing Gateway Terminal. The application was submitted on September 13th and received today, and a decision is required by November 30th. Liz, what should we know about this application?
Just to let you know, you don't have a staff report purposely because staff has not completed their respective reviews yet. Mary's working on Hagen, working on Mother's, Mary's got a personal review. We don't have final staff reports submitted. But we wanted Attorney Heller to, on behalf of the applicant, present this application to you. So if you have any questions, you can ask her. This evening, and he will try to address it before the next meeting, but staff have not done their reports yet. As you know, this is the Gateway Terminal, and the last approval at that site, the original approval was phase one and various phase two. So phase one was the road salt facility, phase two was the work that needed to be done for phase 3A and 3B to be able to utilize the site. So phase two work was done as part of the first approval. Phase three approval was granted by this commission. It was 3A, which was on a concrete pad, which is actually where this work is going to be located. And phase 3B was on the rest of the site. So phase two work was completed. And so at this time, the uses of phase three are allowed. This is a new use that's being added in the phase 3A area. Haven't really given it a title yet. But I'm going to turn it over to Attorney Heller, if it's okay with you, so that he can present this application to you. It's for a marine materials, I should come up with like the numbers, marine materials management translating facility. Okay. That being said,
it's the river.
Yeah, that's true.
Good evening again. For the record, Harry Heller, 736 Route 32 in Uncasville, representing the applicant SSKH2 LLC, who will be the operator of this proposed facility, as well as Gateway Montville, the lessee of the property. As you may recall, the Gateway property encompasses several properties. The property at 133 Depot Road was approved by this commission for the salt storage facility. If any of you have been down there, that facility has been completed. I think everyone will agree it came out great. And it'll be ready for commercial use this winter season. The property at 125 Depot Road is the northerlymost parcel that's on the west bank of the Thames River, and it contains almost 12 acres of land. The northern portion of that 12-acre parcel was the site of the former AES Thames cogeneration plant. And when that plant was disassembled, the concrete pad or foundation was left, and that remains on site. In conjunction with phase three of the Gateway project that your commission approved last year, that area was approved for intermodal use, which was both receiving goods by ship and shipping goods out from shore to ship. This application is an enhancement of the phase three operation. When you approved phase 3A, there was a specific provision in the approval that it did not allow manufacturing, because it's not permitted in the zone. This is an industrial zoning district, and all of your uses in the industrial zone are uses allowed as of right with site plan approval, but it was not requested in that application. This application is an enhancement. We're not proposing any additional site improvements. All of the site improvements in conjunction with phase two have been completed. All of the stormwater management system is installed, the hydrodynamic separators and the catch basins, and as-built plans have been provided to the town prepared by Boundaries, who was the civil engineer on the earlier phases of this project. Al Kovalek, who is with us this evening, is the engineer on this project. This project is not a site modification, but rather an operational application to authorize the utilization of that northerly portion of the 12-acre parcel for a manufacturing process. And the manufacturing process is the offloading, stabilization, and transport of dredged materials from harbor and channel dredging. Just like roads require periodic maintenance, filling potholes, resurfacing, things like that, the waterways of the state also require maintenance. On about a 10-year cycle, the waterways that have been dredged silt back in so that they are less than their design depth, and they have to be dredged at about 10-year intervals in order to restore them to that dredge depth. For instance, in the Thames River, the dredge depth is about 40 feet up until the submarine base. From the submarine base up to Norwich, the dredge depth is 25 feet, and that dredging has to occur to maintain those depths. So the process that we're going to talk about this evening is an essential component of maintaining those waterways so that they are available for safe navigation by ships. Dredged materials are proposed to be brought to this site by barge, and the barges will contain roughly 2,000 cubic yards of material. As indicated on the site plan, there are actually two piers at the property at 125 Depot Road. The primary pier is the southerly pier, and then there is a smaller northerly pier, which is adjacent to the concrete pad we're talking about for the AES, the former AES Thames facility. And that will be the primary pier that will be utilized in conjunction with this operation. So the artist's rendering, which has been submitted with the site plan application, shows the location in Figure A of the two piers, and as I indicated, primary activities will be offloading from the northerly pier. When material is offloaded from the barge, there are three primary methods by which it can be offloaded. It can be offloaded with a clamshell loader, where it's offloaded from the barge to watertight trucks that transport it from the pier to the receiving bins, where it will be amended. And we'll talk about the amendment process in a minute. The second method of conveyance is by a closed conveyor with spill plates under it, so there's no transient loss of material back into the river. And it's transported from the barge to the amendment bins by conveyor. The third method, again, depending upon the constituency of the material and its solubility is it can be pumped through a pumping system to the amendment bins. But all of the material that is offloaded will go to the amendment bins. You can see on the rendering, we have two silos on the property. Those silos will store Portland cement. Portland cement is the amendment material that is utilized to stabilize the dredged material because the dredged material has water content that in most instances, unless the dredged material is a free-draining material like a gravel or sand, almost all of your dredged material will have water content that has to be stabilized before the material is suitable for transport over the roads or by rail off of the site. So the water is, the dredged material is offloaded into the bins, and in the bins it will be amended with Portland concrete at about a 4 to 8% application, again depending on the constituency of the material. And that will be, after it cures, sufficient for it to stabilize so that it's available for transport off of the site. And in order for it to be transported off of the site, a paint filter test has to be performed in order to determine that there is no freestanding water in the amended dredged material. So if it doesn't pass the paint filter test, then it has to be amended again until it passes that test so it can be transported either by rail or by truck without any loss of material. The water that is taken off of the process, which accumulates in the amendment bins, is pumped to a frac tank. And it's about a 2,000-gallon frac tank. And that water will be utilized as part of the amendment process for mixing in the pug mill with the Portland cement. If there is excess water accumulated in the frac tank, then it has to be taken from the site by a licensed hauler to a licensed receiving facility. There are three potential ways that the material will be amended in the amendment bins, either with a screw on an excavator, with a pug mill, or a proprietary process that has been developed by the applicant's affiliates, which is a, it's in the narrative, I forget the name of it. But it's a proprietary pumping process through which it is amended. The amended material will be stored in the bins on the site, and you can see we have two storage bins where it will cure until it is ready to be transported off-site. Now, in our discussions on the operation with staff and with our engineers, there were a couple of concerns raised that I'd like to address, although again I'll point out that these are uses permitted by right in the zoning district under section 13.2.1. Manufacturing processes are a use permitted by right, and this is a manufacturing process in order to amend this material. And under 13.2.10, water dependent uses are authorized in the industrial zoning district. And certainly this is a water-dependent use, not only the use itself, but also the end result, which is the improvement of the state's waterways. Now, there are three categories of dredged material that are regulated by the state. There is certain material that the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection will allow to be dumped offshore. There is material that is not eligible for offshore disposition, which must come onshore, but which does not contain hazardous waste. And the third category is dredged material that does contain hazardous waste. The only material that will be brought to this site is in category two. It will be dredged material that is required to be disposed of by state regulation onshore, which does not contain hazardous waste. And the way that is determined is it's determined at the dredge site, not when it gets to the facility. So at the dredge site, where the material is being dredged, the dredging operators are required to test that material for hazardous constituents on a periodic basis. It's not just at the initiation of the operation, but periodically at defined intervals throughout the operation, that material is required to be tested in order to determine whether or not there are any hazardous constituents. And if there are hazardous constituents, then it is required to go to a hazardous waste disposal facility. So the issues that we want to address, first of all, concern was raised about traffic. You may recall that when we permitted the salt facility, we presented a traffic report to the commission prepared by F.A. Hesketh and Associates. And that report delineated both average truck traffic that would be generated from the facility as well as the distribution of that traffic over town and state highways. And what it found was the vast majority of the truck traffic generated from the facility would take Depot Road, cross Route 160, cross Route 32 to Route 163 to access Interstate 395. And we had peaking that was determined by Hesketh on pre-storm days when it was anticipated by weather report that we were going to have inclement winter weather. And the peaking for those days was 448 truck trips per day. Dredging in the state of Connecticut by regulation can only occur between October 1 and February 28th. So immediately when we started working on this application, we identified the fact that we may have concurrent peaks both in the truck traffic generated from the disposition of the amended dredged materials and the truck traffic generated from the salt operation in pre-storm events. So one of the parameters that we have proposed in conjunction with this application is that there will be no removal of amended dredged material from this site during pre-storm event days when it's anticipated that we'll have heavy truck traffic utilizing the salt facility. And I should point out that the maximum volume that we're anticipating as a result of the proposed dredged material facility is 120 trucks per day, which would translate to 240 trips, 120 in, 120 out, which is about half of what the peaking requirement was authorized by your commission for the salt storage facility. So by avoiding the concurrent peaks, this facility will generate significantly less peak truck traffic than the salt facility will. The second concern that was raised was, is there going to be odor involved with this process? And the dredged materials are inert materials. They have not been exposed to oxygen when they're on the bottom of the waterways. There is no smell to that material unless there are shellfish in the material. If there's shellfish in the material, there will be an odor. But that is transient because the shellfish are only in the top 1 foot of the dredged material. So we do not anticipate that there will be any significant odor issues that will be created as a result of this operation. The amendment of the dredged materials requires a permit from the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Currently, the applicant and its affiliate, Tipping Point Resources, has obtained a permit for a demonstration operation, which is limited to 250,000 cubic yards of material. So that permit has been submitted with the application for this site plan. We have also been in touch with Scott Hesketh from F.A. Hesketh & Associates, who testified before the commission last year, to determine whether or not, if we had concurrent peaks of traffic between this operation and the salt facility, the roadway network would be able to accommodate it. You also have in the application materials a December 15, 2022 amended report from Scott Hesketh that says that the roadway network can accommodate without incident that additional traffic. But as I indicated, we're not proposing that. We are proposing as a condition of this permit that no material be removed on days when there's peaking at the salt storage facility. This is both a site plan application and a coastal site plan application because it's located in the coastal zone. So the application has been submitted to the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. They have a 35-day comment period. We received some very preliminary comments today, but we need to see those comments before we're in a position to address them in toto. So that's a brief overview of what we're proposing. Be glad to address any questions.
Commissioner Longton.
Thank you. Just a quick question, clarification. Do I correctly understand that the reason this becomes a manufacturing operation is because you're creating the stabilized material by adding Portland cement?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. So you're not making anything?
Correct.
Well, in a sense, we are making something because this material, after it's amended, has a couple of uses in the marketplace. One of the initial destinations for the amended material is utilization for the environmental cap at the Triangle Wire site up in Griswold, which was a hazardous waste or facility, not a facility, but it's been contaminated with hazardous waste and it has to be capped. This material is eligible for use as an environmental cap. It is also, after it's amended, available for use for structural fill. So it's not just going to a landfill somewhere. It has specific application.
So it's a sellable product?
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stone?
I was just curious, you had mentioned that the dredging needs to take place every 10 years or so.
Yes.
Where was this material being dealt with prior to this application?
Other sites. And again, as I indicated, based on the constituency of the material, some of it is disposed of offshore.
Yep.
In specifically identified dumping sites. But when it's required to come onshore, it comes to a facility like this.
And where are the other facilities currently located?
Thanks.
marine materials management. So it goes all over the place. So the big switch here, so part of my partner is that we developed this with for a couple of years now, this whole migration of being able to go from the open water to upland happened in New York, New Jersey Harbor 20 years ago, 15 years ago. So a lot of my partners saw that evolution. They saw a lot of the challenges that people were having in Long Island Sound and said, there's going to be a need in this area to do something smart with this material. So until we're sort of up and running, there are very limited options. Like, they'll send stuff to the middle of Pennsylvania now. You know, that's like what we're up against in terms of where the material goes now. What we're doing, what's sort of getting the most buzz for what we're doing, is we're taking these silts and clays, the real difficult, you know, the squishy stuff, and making structural materials where you can do something productive with it. That's kind of like the shiny thing that we've done different, because we don't want to just bring it up out of the water and then, you know, send it to a landfill. It doesn't have to go. So we're finding good uses on the back end for it. And beyond, I just want to add this one other point that you mentioned. We're trying to do down here, too, is also not just do the silts and the clays and the sands, but our partner has a lot of revetment projects. Will be big, large stone. So it's really a comprehensive marine material support effort, from rock from the shoreline to the barges, and dredge material from barges, upland, you know, stabilized upland brownfields, kind of clean up some capping work. So there's all kinds of places. But none of them are close, and none of them are as interesting or useful and beneficial as sort of capping a brownfield or doing something like that.
It's a follow-up question. Didn't answer that question, but... So we're not just talking about dredging the Thames. We're talking about bringing materials in from wherever.
Yeah, but yes. And so dredging is a highly, highly regulated process,
right,
in, you know, industry in general. And so they can't even take it out of the water until it's fully characterized and sampled and they know where it's going. So we're comfortable, and he said that's not a... comes to the site and then we figure it out. That all is very much prescribed before it even shows up.
It's going to come from somewhere in the state of Connecticut, because it's very expensive to move this stuff. So, you know, you're looking for a place to enable this process that's relatively close to the source, so you don't have that expensive tow, because it's all on barges and you're towing them with tugboats, so it's an expensive process.
Okay. So specifically salt water. We're not talking other, well, brackish, I guess, for the Thames, but
yeah, I mean, when you get up to Norwich, you're in brackish water.
No fresh water or dredging or anything like that. Okay. And nothing from other states. We'll just be taking Connecticut.
Highly unlikely.
Material.
Yeah, I think if I could just speak to that just for clarity, right? So permitting wise, they've looked at, they understand it's a regional solution. So there are probably, Rhode Island obviously is not that far away, so it's really a matter of economics, the towing and the barging. It's not a question of the type of material, because it's the clean sand is the clean sand, no matter if it's, you know, Boston or down in New York or Connecticut. So it's just matching up the quality of material with our, you know, end use geotechnically, and then the economics of how far away make the most sense for the dredger, really.
Yeah, and the reason for the questions is just Thames River traffic. I mean, we've got subs coming in and out. We've got ferries coming in and out. We're going to have these barges coming in and out. I don't know how often, but is that going to be an issue?
No.
Well, that's up to the dredger. That has to be coordinated. I mean, I'm not familiar with those regulations, but there are some very specific regulations because of the sensitivity of the sub base.
Sure.
But what I will say is, if you look at the Thames River today, the Thames River as a commercial vehicle is incredibly underutilized, not just as a harbor, but based on the manner in which that harbor has been utilized historically. You used to have shipments to Norwich all the time by tanker and barge. To the Norwich State Hospital, you had the coal power plant, the Montville plant, where you had barges coming in there twice a week, every week. All of that ship traffic on the river north of the sub base is gone. So I see as a priority for regional development, utilizing the Thames River as a economic development vehicle.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's talk about these amendment pits.
Bins.
Containers. What was the term you used? Amendment?
Bins.
Bins. Bins, yeah. Let's talk about that. So, obviously, these are non-porous, contained.
They are cement, you know, for use of a better term, mafia blocks that create the perimeter, and then they're lined with an HDPE high-density liner. Yes, so they're watertight.
Yes. Okay. So, and then if there's any slurry, I would call it slurry. You didn't use that word, Attorney Heller, but if there's a slurry, there's a possibility you could pump this at some point, right?
Some of the material is so water-laden that it can be pumped from the barge to the amendment bin.
So now we have to extract, and I'm speaking from what I listened. If I got me wrong, please correct me. We have to extract some of the water content in order to get the right mix so we can put the cement in to make this a product, correct?
Correct.
But we only have a 2,000-gallon storage facility. Am I correct?
Is it 2 or 20?
No. 20. I just want to, yeah. The nuance in the processing is we're digging into, and I just give you a little bit more color on it. I think I know where you're driving at, right? So the material's coming in. It's really important to understand the variability of the material. It could be gravel, could be this mucky, you know, silty clay. Mm-hmm. And so that whole range of material, varying water content, is going to show up at the dock. And if it's got freestanding water, we can pump that out. That would be collected into a 21,000-gallon frat tank.
And yeah, I was off by a multiple of
10. You did say 2,000, right?
Okay. I let it slide, and I said, he's doing great. I'm okay. But for the softer muds, so we have different mixing tools, depending on if it's gravel, if it's soft mud. So one of the tools to mix it that he mentioned with the proprietary tool is the pneumatic flow tube mixer, and that requires a cement slurry. So we use that water, so we use the dry cement, make a grout slurry, and add that into the cement, so into the sediment coming off the barge. So after like I said, this barge shows up, we can decant some standing water, we can recycle that water, but then we're left with what's in the barge to stabilize. So if it can stack up pretty good, we put on a conveyor. If it's slurry, then we pump it through this tube, and in that process is where we add the cement. So there's no once it's up in the bins, basically any kind of free-flowing extra water, we've taken that out of the equation, and then it's just a matter of adding the cement with the right mixing tool so we get good mixing and get the product that we want on the geotechnical side.
The goal is to empty the barge completely. That's the point I'm driving to is the barge has to be empty when it leaves.
Well, that's part of it. Yes.
Right.
Yes. I mean, that's actually what's very important to the industry, to the market, is that they don't want to sit there for a day and 2 days. What's good about this facility is we can get the barge offloaded and get them that barge back. Hmm. That's why, depending on what we can handle a bunch of different types of material and get that barge back, and that's important.
I don't know if you were headed in this direction, Commissioner Pike, but the operating protocol requires them to maintain 1 foot of freeboard in those bins so that if we have a significant rain event, it's not going to overtop.
I was getting there. I was getting there, yes.
We said this, we're sending out of the bins within, I think last time we did it in May, it was 12 hours. Within 12 hours, they're on trucks off site. That was a little tight, sometimes a little bit longer, a little bit more cement, stiffened up, but it's pretty quick because we don't have a lot of storage. It's not like we've got 100,000 yards of storage on site. We've got limited storage in terms of after we process it, we just have to push material through and out the door. So it gets dried out pretty quick.
So while you're at it, so you're telling me, so there's three categories of dredging, and you're only going to accept one category.
Correct.
Okay. So the paperwork I'm gathering is going to be brought to the site with the barge. It verifies that is actually what you expect to get, not hazardous.
Yes,
non-hazardous.
That's all done before. That's all done.
But they bring you documentation saying specifically this is.
Yeah, the lab results that go with the sampling of the stuff in the water, right?
Right.
And that all that documentation goes along with the dredging permit.
the regulators look at that and say, okay, this can go here, this, you know, so that's all done ahead of time.
So when it's delivered to you, you know it's documented.
Yep, our transportation records all ready to go, and you know how much we're going to dose it.
Final question I have is, so when you start your presentation, Attorney Heller, you were talking about, this is not an enhancement or a modification, but I'm kind of wrapping my head around this because we're doing a pretty dramatic change here. We're going into manufacturing, even though you said this was already permitted.
No, this process isn't permitted, this operation, but what you did permit was intermodal use. So
right.
you anticipated ships bringing materials in and ships taking material out.
Lumber.
Well, materials. It could be lumber. It could be stone. It could be aggregate.
It was material. You're correct.
Yeah.
So, but it's not an enhancement or a modification. I'm trying to figure out, wrap my head around this. We're not enhancing or modifying.
May I comment? So.
Why not?
Go on. Okay.
So, you approved phase three.
Right. Okay.
Phase three was broken up into phases because 3A, they wanted to conduct the material storage right away, and there were no site improvements required to do.
Yes. Okay,
because the cement is already there. Mm-hmm. The cement happened. Mm-hmm. Phase 3B had to wait to be allowed to have the materials stockpiled until the site was completed, mm-hmm. the site work on phase two. So this is, to me, a modification of phase three. Three approval because you're adding another use to phase three now. Harry Heller and I are still debating what we're going to call it. I, you know, would like to call it phase 3C, just so we can keep track of what uses were allowed. Phase three use allowed was material storage on that cement pad. Phase 3B was material storage everywhere else on the north side of the city. And then this would be a third use that is now permitted in addition to those other uses. But we, at the time you approved 3A uses, okay, there was no manufacturing. There was no, all it was for storage. So now Attorney Heller is coming in and modifying that phase 3 approval to add a new use. Does that make sense to you in layman's dumb planner?
No, certainly.
Let's not get caught up in the terminology. I think we all agree
I understand.
This is a new use. It requires approval from the commission.
No, I understand. I'm fine with that answer. Thank you. All set. Thank you.
Yes, you said sometimes you have to add water to make a slurry of some kind. And then when you finish, you recycle that water. What do you mean, recycle the water? What do you do with it?
The excess water that's taken off of the barge or out of the bins goes to that frac tank, and that's recycled to create the Portland cement slurry that's mixed with the dredged material.
Rather than adding the Portland cement dry powder, we report it, sometimes it's better, more efficient to add the Portland cement as a slurry, just water and cement as a slurry and gravel. So that water that's recycled, that's what we use it for.
Okay, so this water is never dumped back into the river?
No. If that frac tank reaches its capacity, then they have to bring in a licensed hauler, and that has to be taken to an approved facility.
Thank you.
It can't be discharged to the river. It can't be discharged to the river.
I was confused by the word recycled.
Commissioner Kobolek?
How many cubic yards do these bins hold?
It's on the site plan. Do you have the site? I think 1,600. The amendment bins are smaller. But go to sheet.
No. 4,000 yards?
Yeah, I think. But there's a table in here. Let's go past these.
Here we are.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's on sheet.
Yep.
04.
Yep.
Okay. A total of.
So for the record, what?
3,000 cubic yards.
And.
To
answer that question.
To
answer the question,
yes,
we have
receiving bin number one has 490 cubic yards of capacity. Receiving bin number two has 430. Storage bin number one has 1,600. Storage bin number two has 1,200. So you have total storage capacity in the bins of 3,720.
And how many cubic yards are in a barge?
About 2,000.
I think we know on the drawings still when this cement is added. Those bonds you just mentioned were, if it were just wet and leveled out, basically stacked up. It's not a bottom.
It can hold more.
Another question is, once this material is treated and ready for sale, where do you propose stockpiling that?
Well, that's part of what why it's important for us to have it all figured out before it shows up. Because it's really getting it right off the site. That's the point of not wanting to. We just want to keep it stabilizing and stiff enough to get on the truck and get out.
Right. Because I know there was concerns that there was supposed to be fill placed on that whole plane of area out beyond the railroad tracks that
it got
cut out because
there was an issue, and that's why you remember we modified the phase two plan because the geotechnical engineer said it couldn't bear that
right.
weight.
Yeah. So I was just concerned that it wasn't going to be too much weight on there, and the same thing could happen.
Yeah.
But
another question is,
before it comes in,
are there any provisions in place to contain fugitive dust in the event that, you know, obviously it's going to be saleable, it's going to be able to transport it in a truck, it's going to be dry to a point where, say, during the winter, it freezes and the wind blows and it's going to be blowing stuff at the neighbors.
It's not going to be dry. It's not going to have freestanding water. So we don't anticipate that anything that you'd consider dry, like a sand or gravel operation, would be staying there on site. It's gone by then.
Yeah, it really is just not free flow of water on the site.
Okay.
Commissioner, do you have any questions?
Hours of operation?
No nighttime operation. I believe it's 7 to 5 on weekdays and maybe it's 5:30. Let me see.
Okay, you need that break.
It's in the narrative.
It's 7 a.m. 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. No operations conducted in conjunction. Sundays are legal holidays. Since dredging operations are by regulation conducted during winter months, activities will be occurring on site during periods of darkness. 7:15 and 4:15 to 6, therefore, they will have to work. The hours are 7 to 6, Monday through Saturday. No Sundays or legal holidays.
Oh, nice.
Which, honestly, I'm pretty sure that's what the SALT facility.
All of the dredgers want us to go 24/7. Mm-hmm. All of the dredgers want us to go 24/7.
That's not what's proposed.
No.
No.
Because my phone
would
be ready.
Yeah, unions. It still will.
Any other questions, Commissioner Cole?
I'm sure I have questions. I'm just not smart enough to ask them yet.
Well, you can think about it for a month and hit me next month.
Thank you.
Commissioner Desjardins?
None. You answer almost 99.9% of our questions.
Commissioner Longton,
Yeah. I have one more question. The dredging is limited to the winter months, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is that a state regulation?
Because of the spawning cycle for the fish.
Yes.
They don't want dredging when the fish are spawning.
All right. But we're not going to be bringing in stuff only from Connecticut. It could be regional.
Well, I just want to, if I could, our windows, there's a few weeks of in Connecticut, May window, and you're right. Other states, there's different windows based on fish spawning and all that. So. As a business, we want to operate as many months of the year as we possibly can. So
okay, so you could potentially be working year-round.
Yes, but it's more, it's less likely that off-season is going to be a stage stretch. So I don't see that.
the farther away the source is, the less likely it'll come here.
That's right. And the other thing is that the reason we mentioned the winter is because of the traffic concern, because you have that potential concurrent peaking with the salt facility. So the salt facility, if they do have an opportunity in May, you're not going to have traffic using that salt facility in May.
Thank you.
Commissioner Pike? To follow up on the hours, will barges be allowed to show up and wait, or can they not arrive? Do they have to arrive within business hours only?
We I didn't even consider that. We established the operating hours, which are what's in the application, for operations on site. Now, a barge may show up, but it's not going to be offloaded.
You're hanging around.
I understand that. I'm thinking that if I'm out of the box, gentlemen, stop me. I'm just thinking a barge shows up, the place is closed, the barge shows up, who's going to tie it up? I mean, there's some logistics involved here. They come to work in the morning, there's a barge waiting for them.
I don't know the answer to this, but I can get you the answer.
Thank you.
I don't think they're allowed to operate on the river at night.
Thank you.
Particularly with the security issues with the sub-base. John, I don't know if you know.
I don't know.
But I can get an answer to that.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure there's an answer.
Yep.
I could add a little color. The tug operators are all about the tides, mm-hmm. So they really do come in at all times of the day. So it really would be if they're coming, maybe they come at 6 in the morning.
Yeah, tide.
Have a representative there to tie up the barge and take care and control of that barge. It's not going to leave it and take off, But I think that, and if there were real restrictions on them being able to tie off and model in off hours, they would just more offshore or something until they were ready for it.
Yeah, you have to come
just up. By way of example, and this isn't an answer, and we'll get you an answer. But there is a 600-foot tanker that comes in once a month to Allen's Point, the former Dow Chemical facility. And if that gets there after dusk, it is required to moor out off of Fisher's Island, and the tugs don't bring it in the river until daylight.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't put the tides.
Okay. Thank you.
Liz, any last comments?
I actually have a couple questions that I thought of during the presentation when we get to them. So the first one, you talk about being a comprehensive support. You talked about rocks. Tell me about the rocks. What do you do with the rocks? You're talking about rocks that you're removing from the dredge materials. And what do you do with them? Do you crush them on site?
No. I think he was talking about a more comprehensive intermodal use of this site. If they have empty barges going back somewhere,
that's already allowed at the site, though.
Absolutely.
So that's why
I didn't include it in the narrative.
Right, so when you talked about rocks, you were talking about what's already happening at the site, and not that you're going to take rocks at your main. You're not going to do any manufacturing with rocks.
It's really just like transferring large quarry.
But you're correct. That's already approved.
We're only addressing this. So that was one question. The other question I have is, you said that the materials, are basically there for 12 hours and they get transported off the site. That's all logistics from your company and where it's going and whatnot. What if you can't get them off on the site? Are you going to be storing any of that amended material on site? Other than in those bins?
No, that backs up all the way to the barges being delivered. We don't keep the barges coming to stockpile the property.
No, I understand. Yeah. So let's say that you have barge coming in of your 2,000 cubic yards and you offload it, but it's a peak time for the salt storage, so you can't truck it out.
It's a logistic. It's us communicating with the client, saying, all right, we're going to secure it and don't bring it on Thursday because we're not, just really
dispatchers.
And in all honesty, with the winters we've had the last few years, I don't anticipate a lot of those days.
One never knows.
You went from La Nina to El Nino.
It has been raining for the last 3 months, every other day.
No snow to find the
pretty soon, Bank Street will be underwater.
Was that the kiss of death?
It might have been. It might have been.
Considering an inch of rain is 10 inches of snow, yeah, that might have been.
So I have one other question, and then I expect not to be that we can use it yet, and you ask a lot of good questions that the applicant will follow up on for you, and we can get our staff comments together. I do recommend that this be tabled. I'm sorry.
You're going to roll your eyes at this, but I feel because we've had the presentation, it is appropriate to actually table it rather than postpone at this time. Semantics. Thank you very much, Attorney Heller. All right, so would anyone like to make a motion to table this item until our next meeting?
I'll table.
Okay. And I'll second the table.
Okay, first and seconded by Commissioners Longton and Desjardins. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay, the motion passes. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Item 9B is Commission Discussion of Regulation of Cannabis Establishments in the Town of Montville. In light of the addition of item C to the agenda, which is an additional or a re-up basically of the moratorium, I would propose that we address the moratorium first.
I think so.
So you table the discussion until after you've approved the extension?
Yeah, I would.
I make a motion that we table the discussion of the regulation of cannabis until after we've had the public hearing.
Second.
Okay. So this is until after the public hearing. So we'll have a public hearing next month.
Oh, we're going to have to do something after you table this.
Oh, please.
We can do that. You're not having a discussion. It's not an application. You don't have to do it. But if you want to, you still have to address item C and you have to make
right.
Right. So I'd like to do that first because we did have a few applications this evening. I would propose that we wait to have discussion on this topic. So
item B would be we're gonna postpone that till later.
Right.
So C has been moved and seconded, correct?
No, B is. Yeah.
We're still on B.
So
tabling B has been moved.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
I'm fine with that motion as it stands, which is to table item 8B until after the public hearing proposed in 8C.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Poole seconded.
Commissioner Poole seconded. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? So we will have our discussion next month.
Okay.
Or part of the discussion next one. Item 9C is 23ZC3, Zoning Regulation Text Amendment to amend Section 21A.2.3, mm-hmm. Cannabis Moratorium Effective Date. The applicant is the Town of Montville Planning and Zoning Commission. Date of receipt is today. So essentially, this is to extend our moratorium or to re-up our moratorium for another 6 months so that we can work through these regulations. In order to do that, we need to set a public hearing for October 24th. So the motion would be to set a public hearing for this item.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Okay, first and seconded by Commissioners Longton and Desjardins. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay, the motion passes.
I think you also then set a public hearing. Right, they are two separate things. So we're going to have the public hearing to extend the moratorium. Yep.
We're not discussing regulations tonight.
We're good. I'm
Okay.
Just 86 what I said.
Okay. Sure.
Restaurant lingo.
Moving on to item 10, zoning matters. We've got the CEO report.
And I want to make a comment before. So Marion Skadalika, as you know, is our assistant planner now. Mm-hmm. She's been acting as the interim zoning and wetlands official. At this time, she is no longer the zoning and wetlands official. We have elevated Stacy Radford to that position. Congratulations to her. Just letting you know, I mean, this is all like circumstance. So she came on board and she picked up on this stuff really fast. And, you know, you either get it or you don't. No offense, but some people really get it good. And she picked it up very quickly, as Meredith did. The timing just so happened that the CASIO certification course just opened. And that's one of the requirements of being a zoning enforcement officer in the state of Connecticut now. It's a law that says you have to be enrolled in good standing in the CASIO course. So it's a two-part course. She's taken the first course. She aced the exam. Ooh. So she's on her way. That being said, Meredith and I have been training her. And she's been doing great. Even as the admin, Meredith takes her out on site inspections. We include her in our meetings so she knows what's going on, and I'm really excited that she's taken that position. Now we have an open admin position, so if you have anyone like either of these two, send them my way. I almost didn't want to hire her because she's really good at the admin position, but I also don't want to hold her back. So, yeah, we have an open position for that. That being said, Meredith's still going to give the report because she did all this stuff.
Okay, let's go for it.
Well, congratulations to Stacy. Well deserved, and we're very excited for you.
That job and her job. So we're all sort of doing multiple jobs right now.
Sounds fun.
That's why she's on.
I have several hats that you can borrow.
Good. Good for your CV.
Meredith Badaluca, assistant planner for the record. This is my last CEO report.
You think?
Congratulations to Stacy. This month we had 216 inquiries via phone, email, or in the office. At the beginning of the reporting period, we had 298 open zoning permits. We closed out 8 with field inspections. We did 27 field inspections for either ENS controls, open permit inspections, drainage inspections, and complaint inspections. We issued 26 zoning permits, denied 3 zoning permits, and we have 3 that are pending currently, waiting on some additional information. Currently, there are 316 open permits. We had 3 new zoning complaints. We have 12 ongoing complaints that we are working on. We have 2 ongoing wetland enforcement actions that we are currently working on. They are to provide us with applications for the next wetlands meeting. Currently, we have no owner wetlands applications before us, and we have 1 ZBA application before us for the October meeting.
Very much. Any questions for Meredith?
Yes.
That was too short. Do it again.
Where's Beach Road, please?
Beach Road?
Yes, where is that, please?
Beach. When you are going from the manor to Oxabaxo and go where Wade Fish is right on Oxabaxo.
Yes.
If you look over where the house burnt down recently.
That Beach Lane.
That's right? Beach. Thank you.
That Beach Lane, right?
Beach Lane, yeah.
Yeah. That's right here.
The cottage, a.k.a. the cottages.
Yeah, right here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Just out of curiosity.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
We've denied 3 zoning permits.
Yes.
What's the rationale for the declination?
They had to actually redo their application. What they were asking for did not meet the regulations.
Okay.
They came in, they met with Liz and I. We corrected it. Okay. The way they presented it, we had to deny it.
Okay.
The other one that we had to deny, they did not meet the front yard setback.
Okay.
Actually get an inland wetlands permit before we can issue.
Perfect. So could they
came in late this afternoon with that application.
apply for inland wetlands.
Gotcha. So the setback could be, could go to Zoning Board of Appeals and...
They could, but what they wanted, it was...
Not going to work. Okay. Just, I'm just curious.
I mean, they could, but...
Yeah, okay.
So I'm going to add a little sort of statute education to all this. When zoning permits are committed, you have to stamp and receive, right? And then we have, they're considered a site plan, so you have to act within 65 days. But if you deny an application, the applicant who you deny has the right to appeal the decision of the zoning enforcement officer within 15 days to the ZBA. So we don't just let them sit there hanging out. We either, you know, approve them. If we can meet with somebody and they can modify it right there, then we can approve it. But if we can't, then we deny it, and then they come back with a new approval. But you have to act on these things just as if, like, you guys have to act.
Mm-hmm. So,
because there's legal appeal periods that have to be, you know, the applicant can do it. So it would be denied on a date. If they wanted to appeal it because they thought the zoning enforcement officer was wrong, they can't.
Yeah, you also do it because of their, to protect them too. Because if they build the wrong place and something happens, they said, you proved it. And,
so just there's some legal stuff that, you know, we don't like deny applications. Right. And we say, oh, we can't approve this, so why don't we fix it? We work with people all the time. Sometimes you just can't.
Got it. So. Thank you very much.
Okay, on to your report.
Okay, a couple of fun things. So the Pink Row, the apartments. The rental units down at the Freya factory.
Yes.
We closed out a brownfields grant, finally. We've been working on it since October of 2021. Dakota, myself, and the DECD. Finally got into the hands of the attorneys a couple months ago, and after the attorneys working on it for a couple months, that grant is closed, which means that once they submit a certain set of paperwork to the Commissioner on Human Rights and Opportunities, they can start all the remediation work, and they hope to be done with all that site work by September of next year.
Okay.
They already have a building permit. They've already been working on the inside. If any of you ever want to see the inside and see what they've done so far, give us a call. We can set up a tour for you.
Okay.
We were shocked. We had no idea they were working on these units. I mean, these units are, like, already wired and, you know, they have washer dryers and whatnot in the units.
But no, but
and it's really, really neat what they've done. So there's exposed brick and beams. I mean, the upstairs has these gigantic beams that were in there, and they're all exposed. It's really kind of cool. They're going to be kind of neat apartments. There's some that literally, you know, how the river runs through the building, under the building, that look over the river.
Ooh.
These are really neat. These are really, really neat apartments.
How many did you say there are?
72. 52. 7 affordable, deeded affordable in some way.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
72 total, 54 deeded. 57 deeded. What did I say?
57. You said 57.
57 deeded. 72 total.
No.
When? That's because of the financing. I don't know what the total is, how many are going to be for what, but they have to file an affordability plan on the landowners. They may have already done that. I don't know. I have to check that out with Attorney Willis. He sent me gigantic amounts of material a couple of days ago. So the other thing we've done is we have an RFP out right now, so we'll just start the work on the fishing pier.
Ooh.
First thing that has to be done on the fishing pier is they have to do borings.
Mm-hmm.
They have to determine, you know, they have to do engineering consulting services. Once that's done, we're going to put an RFP out for, we have to treat the project separately, but practically they have to be built together, the boat launch repairs improvements and the fishing pier construction. So when we get the engineering work done from the geotechnical stuff done, then we can put an RFP out for the whole project. And I really, really want to get started on it next year. It may close the boat launch facility for a little while. I can't tell you when it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in the middle of the summer, if it's in the spring. But, you know, I talked to Deep Fisheries, he said, you know, people will have to understand, first of all, the boat launch repairs are needed so badly. The boat launch is in terrible condition. So, yeah.
They closed down the Groton one for a while, so what's
right.
the big deal?
This is what they do. If they fix one, they close it, so people that usually maybe drop in Montville will have to go to New London or to
Groton.
So, just to let you know, there will be a period of time it's
going
to be really excited that project, you know, getting started. There's actually, you signed the agreement, it's really cool. lot of developers. You can see what we've been working on. And one fun thing is, about a year ago, I was appointed by the governor to the Mobile Manufactured Home Advisory Council. Ooh. And it's a council that consists of people from the Department of Housing, CHFA, mobile home park owners, mobile home residents associations, a number of people, and the statute requires a town planner. Somehow someone got to me, and I agreed to sit on it, and it's really, really interesting, and I'm learning so much. In September, I was appointed chairman of that committee.
Ooh.
So that's kind of cool. So,
very cool. Congratulations.
One thing I'm learning about that is, in talking with the acting chairman right now, he tells me there's laws that right now we don't allow a manufactured home on a standalone lot. He's telling me there are laws that specifically say you have to. So, you know, he's going to ask, so could you get me that? I said, because I've been doing this for a long time and I don't know that. And he says, that's the problem, is, you know, land use professionals don't know these laws. So that's, you know, one thing I'm going to work on, and maybe Montville will be the first in Connecticut to allow mobile manufactured homes on single lots. One of the goals of this council is to educate the public that it's not a 10-foot wide by 40-foot long trailer.
Yeah.
These mobile manufactured homes are nice. You know, look at the ones over on across from Hillcrest.
Millwood.
They're nice little homes.
And
you know, I know. You know, and I said, and I'm still learning a lot. I said, well, don't they have to comply with building code? Because that's always been our deal. If it can comply with building code and not just HUD standards, you can build on a single lot. And I've had people take a double wide and attach it to a foundation in such a way that it meets building code, and I was able to approve it. But if it's just a HUD home, you know, it's not, it's only allowed in parks. That's been the way it's been here. So I'm going to be getting some education soon, some more education, and then, you know, at some point I'll let the commission know, you know, what maybe we've been doing that's not really legal. And, you know, because I was thinking, well, maybe we allow them on standalone lots, but they have to have a certain pitch roof. You know what I mean? So that they appear to be, you know, just a regular single family house. And I was told, no, that's, you have to allow. I said, what do you mean? So I'm learning a little bit more about that. So there may be some regulations that we may have to put in place regarding mobile manufactured homes on standalone lots. And, you know, the committee also works on legislation that's going to make these mobile manufactured home parks affordable housing, count as affordable housing.
Yes.
So that's another thing we're working on too, which we bring our affordable housing. We've got a lot of mobile homes here.
Oh, you got that right.
That's why someone pointed them to me. They said, who has a lot of mobile homes in their town?
We sure do.
We have a lot.
How it got to me, and the new development. So anyway, I'm not going to go on. It's late.
Yeah.
I've been busy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My wife is calling.
All right. On to other business, of which there is none. Correspondence. We did receive correspondence from Commissioner Bruce Duchesneau, which, Liz, do you want to? I can read it into the record. That's
fine. You
can
just read it.
Okay.
I received it on Friday.
Yes, it was an email received by Liz. It says, hello, Liz. Effective immediately, I will resign my position on the PZ committee. I don't believe my visions for the town align. Regards, Bruce Duchesneau.
Oh.
So.
And I did reach out to him to say, you know, do you want to discuss it further? Can I talk about it? But I didn't get a response. So I did forward it to the town clerk's office. And they received it, and then I think they forwarded it to the town council, and the town council has to accept the resignation. So we'll be looking for another person.
Right. With that resignation, we have two vacancies. The town council did interview one person, and I believe that they're going to appoint him to the commission. So he should be in attendance at our next meeting. But please put the word out if someone is interested in becoming a member of the commission. We also have three vacancies for alternates,
mm-hmm.
So plenty of opportunity to get involved. So that's that. And no executive session this evening, so would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, first and seconded by Commissioners Sistrunk and Longton.
It lives.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Hello.
What's going on with the 22-unit thing by the...
You say we're on five.